So welcome to another podcast, the first in a while. My name's Russell, I'm in Cardiff, and I'm with Gareth. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
It is only us two. We've had more dropouts than the John Toshack squad. but we've decided to plough on. And what's happened since the last podcast? Howell got married from our gang, so congratulations to him. Maybe she stopped him coming out. I don't know, we're not going to go there. Paul Trollope left and is now Cardiff City manager. Martin Margotson defected to England. Team GB sadly reared its head again. I think that might be as much as we're going to say on that one tonight. It doesn't deserve any more mention. Hal Robson-Kanu is still unemployed. Aaron Ramsey is injured yet again, and it's all Arsene Wenger's fault, who apparently today, I think, didn't even know which games he played and didn't play at the Euros.
Ridiculous response I was reading about today, where he's defended himself against Coleman's suggestion that it was avoidable, which is almost certainly true. By saying, well, he didn't play the quarter-final, semi-final, or the final, which I find incredible that he wouldn't know that Aaron Ramsey played all 90 minutes of that quarter-final, given how superb he was in that game. And goes on to say, well, he effectively had 2 weeks less than Ozil and Giroud and whoever. And okay, maybe a week or so less than the French players, but Ozil must have been done just a few days later. And it's worrying for us that, you know, not only do we seem to now be getting into this tug of war possibly over future Ramsey appearances, but that Wenger is so ill-informed about what Ramsey has done whilst he's been away. I do worry a little bit about, I mean, a lot of people are happy that kind of Coleman was quite bullish about, in that press conference, about a few things, Wenger being one of them, or Arsenal, the treatment of Ramsey being one of them. I'm not sure if it's good for us to get into this ongoing spat with clubs over the availability of players, because there only tends to be one winner in those circumstances.
It's the sort of thing that would come back to haunt us. Yeah. It's sort of March, April time fixture. If Arsenal is still in the business end of a competition or two, injuries elsewhere in midfield and they need him. But I think to be fair, just taking all things equal, I don't disagree with you there. I think Coleman had a right to be a little bit miffed.
No,
if anyone should be miffed, it should be the player himself.
Yeah.
And this does seem to be a recurring thing.
Yeah, I think it can no longer, I mean, if anyone still believed it's coincidence, it can't be. And all of these players, not just Ramsey, Wiltshire and Chamberlain and Walcott, I wonder if they ever reflect on, you know, the implications being at Arsenal seems to have had for their career. And I don't know, I'm no physio, no expert in that, but it's absolutely astonishing the problems Arsenal have had over a long, long period of time. They've had it with Van Persie, they've had it with various other players have come in, that they can't keep their players fit and they can't manage their recoveries from injuries seems incredible, and explains why they haven't won a title. Partly explains why they haven't won a title for so long.
Probably, yeah, no, I think you're probably right. This is not an anti-Arsenal rant, so apologies to any Wales and Arsenal fans, but it's just frustrating, isn't it? Given, you know, we're all still on a high, aren't we? And we're going into this fixture, and there's just distractions.
Yeah.
The biggest news, of course, over the summer was the fact that Simon Davis's goal against Croatia is now finally on YouTube. There must be a kind of like a whole generation of fans in their teens, early 20s, who are blissfully ignorant and unaware of this goal and its true amazingness.
That's but, you. Go and watch it. Watch it now.
It's thanks to Wales fan Caleb Young. His account on YouTube is Caleb Bedwyr. And it's there in all its beauty. And it's also a really tasty kit as well. And it's the only time we wore it. So, a lot's happened. The squad was announced a couple of days ago. Wasn't any real surprises, I think it's fair to say. I know it created a bit of discussion. Why is Simon Church still in there? Robson-Kanu's in there without having a club or having played any games since the Euros. I was maybe expecting a couple of under-21s, but they've got two important home games and they're in knocking on the door of qualifying from their group. So maybe that explains why there's maybe no Wes Burns, no Lee Evans, couple of players like that. Any other talking points in the squad?
Well, I'm not part of the not a committed part of the Bradshaw bandwagon, but it was surprising that he's not in, given that he was in the squad in the spring and only out of the running for a possible place in the 23 because of injury while he was with the squad just after the playoffs, and given our Robson-Kanu's lack of a club and our lack of options up there for a long time, I'm surprised he's not at least in the squad, even though he hasn't had a particularly remarkable start to life in the Championship with Barnsley. I know a lot of Wales fans are very, very keen on him, given the been given more of a chance. But I suppose that was the only kind of obvious omission, given that he was part of that setup, part of our setup just before the tournament, and Dummett and Hughes has come back in.
But presumably, the only time a squad gets overhauled between competitions, between tournaments, would be because of age and retirements and people finishing. You evolve a squad, don't you?
Yeah.
You don't suddenly cull, six or seven players, and suddenly bring in new ones. You phase them out, and I would imagine come the end of this season, Simon Church is probably perhaps phased out of the squad, and Bradshaw comes in.
And Simon Church,
that's how these things work.
27, 28. Well, the idea that he's this kind of 37 that we need to instantly replace is a bit of a. I know he's very limited, but he's not a guy on the verge of retirement, and that is the case with our squad. It was one of the once youngest squads in the tournament. Mm-hmm. We have very little need for a major overhaul. This isn't post 2004 squad. This is a squad that has evolved and changed, and Coleman showed that he's prepared to. I've seen his loyalty criticised a lot, but he has shown he's prepared to bring new and young players in. We've had under 21s involved in the squad, even if they're not in it fully. We've had Jake Taylor and Lee Evans and a whole host of other players come in and stay. Some stay in, some come out of the squad. It seems to be a very flexible setup if you're good enough to get in. I think that ultimately is the bottom line. That Church, despite his limitations, stays in because we don't really have any other outstanding options to get in there. But hopefully that will change soon.
Yeah, it's going to take a bit of adjustment, isn't it, at a new club at a higher level as well. But I think my gut feeling is he's going to be capable. I think he's going to be fine in the Championship. I think he'll score goals. I've seen talk on a message board about it's a new era and things like that, which I just really don't agree with. I mean, it's just more of the same, isn't it?
I like this era.
Yeah,
This is the best era for Wales I've ever experienced. I don't want any more. I've lived through a lot of new eras. Do you know what? They were all really bad.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. That said, when you look at the roster of strikers, and when the way the squad was sort of presented as well, you look in the kind of they're going. A couple of those aren't really strikers, but okay, it's only Vokes who's playing, and it's only Vokes. To be fair, who's also got off the mark and with a hell of a goal as well against Liverpool. So that's great, because of course he didn't have a great deal of chance in the Premier League last time Burnley were there. But it's a bit bare the cupboard, isn't it, up front? So I was surprised that there probably wasn't a couple of players more in there, but I think
Folks gets a chance now. He did really well in the couple of the Russia game, wasn't it? That he came in the Euros, that great goal that he scored as well, brilliant header. But he is very inconsistent for us. He has had a lot of performances where he hasn't really done it well. Premier League player now on form by the looks of it. Hal Robson-Kanu probably isn't going to be fit enough if he hasn't been training properly with the club all summer. I think. So it's a good chance for Vokes now against a fairly weak team, we imagine, to step up and get a goal.
So Vokes has to start, surely.
I think so.
That roster. The curious thing for me with Robson-Kanu is, I suppose as well, I don't imagine that he's pleased with the situation. I mean, I don't know, I wouldn't know how these things work, but it must be frustrating and probably disappointing that he hasn't fixed himself up with the club and that he's had a pre-season, even if it's a curtailed pre-season like a lot of the other Welsh players would have had. And had some games under his belt. But is there also a scenario that the longer this happens, he would still be able to sign for a club after the transfer deadline, but if he still hasn't signed for anybody, surely he doesn't jeopardise picking up an injury for Wales that then jeopardises him of getting a move to anywhere? And does he, and is a club going to want him to play when he's so clearly unfit? So it strikes me as...
It is a little bit strange. I wonder if... Such is the clamour and the desperation around deadline day that maybe clubs who miss out on other strikers or who are desperate to finally find someone with hours to go will give him options that he hasn't had thus far. He's never going to be more marketable. He's never going to have the opportunity for a good move like he's got now. Again, you wouldn't have thought, given his stock after his goal against Belgium. So maybe there have been offers, but as it gets closer to the deadline day, there's possibly more clubs will come in last minute. He hopes that's the only thing I can think of, because there must have been teams interested enough pick him up on a free over the summer, surely.
Well, you'd have thought so. I mean, you know, a lot of Cardiff City fans I know are crying out for a striker.
Yeah, absolutely.
And not necessarily Robson Kahn would be their first choice, but if you know he's free and available.
My other fear is that he has been very good for us, and he does what he does for us really well, and he's made himself a legend and a hero, if he wasn't one already, in the Euros. But let's be, could you be realistic about his ability and what level he's capable of week in, week out in club football? You know, he could get a big move somewhere and sit on the bench for a season. I mean, I wonder if he's better off Championship club, a decent Championship club, getting in the team, maybe score a few goals, improve his goal scoring record at that level a bit would be nice, because I think ultimately that's probably his club level, decent Championship. I think is, I know he had that good year or so at Reading a while back, but I think that's probably about his level now, and it's probably better for us that he's playing regular at the level where he's going to be most likely to do anything.
No, I don't think that's unfair. But we're not going to see him against Moldova, though, will we? I'd be amazed if he plays. It'd be nice if he played, and you know, you obviously wish him for the best. You hope it all works out, but it's a strange one, isn't it? I'm struggling to think of a similar case. I know it happens that players, you know, kind of drift a little bit. I mean, Jason Kumas did it and out of the game for like a season or two, and then came back. I mean, it does happen. But I mean, as you say, this is, you know, he's never going to be any more marketable, is he? I mean, he's just scored scored the goal of the tournament. One of the best goals in tournaments for a long, long time by anybody. But yeah, strange one. Tom Lawrence is back in. Emmett Hughes is back in. And Paul Dummett is back in, as you mentioned earlier. Hughes is probably the most unlucky to miss out.
Yeah, and probably...
Let's not do the whole we should have taken more defenders thing to the Euros, okay?
I
all right, you're over that, aren't you?
I've made my decision. Any decision was made before the Euros.
So notwithstanding that one, Hughes is probably the most unlucky.
Yeah. Probably the most likely to feature now in the Moldova game, given that Ramsey's out, there's a doubt over Ledley now. But he hasn't had game time for Cardiff City, really. He had 15 minutes, I think, against QPR, was it? A couple of minutes then, a week later. You know, he's still settling down at a new club. You know, Dave Edwards, you know, he's worth a shout in the team. Wolves are looking good this season, and it's Walter Zenger now, I think they've got him. In charge, isn't it? And,
although I think Kenny Jackett was unlucky to get fired, but
yeah,
still.
They're undefeated, he's playing every week, so I guess he'll come in.
And Andy King's had games as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what you want. You want players at this stage of the season, this early, to have players playing. Because traditionally, if you recall, there used to be an August friendly that probably would have already come and gone. And inevitably, we were dreadful in it.
Yes.
Because we were so rusty, because players aren't going into it in games. But if you don't have that warm up, you go straight into a competitive fixture. Thankfully, it's only a single fixture; it's not a double header. And I think that's probably why, it's because it's the first international sort of slot of the season. What you want are players playing, which is why, as I say, goes back to the point. I think it is probably down to the fact the under-21s have got important games. I thought Wes Burns might sneak in because he was with the squad, training before the Euros. He went out to Sweden as part of that, as part of the squad. And I just figured that, you know, maybe given that he's started for Aberdeen, Scottish clubs tend to start their seasons that bit earlier as well, that he's had games, and he scored maybe only one or two. He's leaving the bench a lot. I think they're using him more as an impact player, but it's still games and it's still action. So I was a bit surprised there. But you want players playing, and if Edwards and King are playing, then he's gone to them in the past.
Yeah.
They've been perfectly adequate replacements. You know, I know it didn't really happen for King in the semi as a replacement for Ramsey.
But that's a semi-final against Portugal.
Yeah.
This is an experienced now international player. He should be able to come in against Moldova and be effective, shouldn't he?
Yeah. Talking of midfielders who won't be available, David Vaughan announces international retirement. Wish him all the best. Always had a real soft spot for Vaughan. The kind of the epitome of just loyal, dependable. Yeah. I mean, he's probably absolutely no trouble whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know, you give him instructions, and he just carries them out. You ask him to do something, he does it. I bet you get no drama, you get no histrionic, you get nothing. The very definition of a low maintenance player.
For someone who's never been the first name on the team sheet, he's got over 40 caps. You know, this is a player who's been committed to the Welsh team over a long period of time. His debut 2003
against the USA. Nobody in the current setup had made their debut any earlier than that. There's only other one player in the squad, here goes a quizzy for you guys, who was capped under Mark Hughes.
Oh wow. put me on the spot. I'm going to struggle. Collins?
James Collins, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Ledley, I think, then, is the next person in the setup. Although Andrew Croft, I don't know if Andrew Croft is still, is he still sort of part of the setup? Well, is he still available? Because he made that rather random sort of guest appearance.
You mentioned Croft. Kind of, I was thinking about Croft and some earlier players of that type as I was as kind of looking back through some of Vaughan's career early on. And what I kind of, as I realised, what I liked about Vaughan is that, like I say, he's never been the first name on the team sheet. But he was there over a long period of time, in and out of the team, often being overlooked in favour of Carl Fletcher. In one game, he's on the bench while Brian Stock, remember him, with Doncaster Rovers, I think it was, is getting a game. Then Croft seemed to be favoured, and he was just kind of breaking into the team in, 2009, 2010. Mm. But then when Speed came in, he dropped out again in favour of Croft. But then he's back again when Coleman takes over. And
Collison, Ledley get games ahead of him.
But he played quite a lot in.
He was always sort of almost like permanent sort of fourth or fifth choice.
Yeah, if you think after he had three kind of decent seasons in the Premier League, I think one at Blackpool, a couple at Sunderland, and after that he had a terrible run of injuries. He had two seasons where he at club level he kind of played more than about 20 games. But even through that time, he seemed to be kind of, as he was coming back from injury, he'd be in the Welsh squad. He was on the bench. You know, he played against Scotland and Croatia in the last lot of World Cup qualifiers. He played in when it really turned around for us, actually, with that win over Macedonia and the draw in Belgium. He played 90 minutes in both of those games, I think. So, yeah, he's been really...
He was unfussy, he was unhurried, he came on. Had a great little cameo in Israel in the last campaign.
Yeah.
He also, thanks to Leon, he pointed this out on Twitter this afternoon, he's also the player that just rolls the football forward by about 2 yards to Bale to pick up for that winner against Scotland. And that's still technically an assist.
Yeah, that's absolutely an assist. I was looking through his kind of highlights reel after Leon mentioned that on Twitter, and that kind of was amusing. But look back to those, his goal in, 2009 against Liechtenstein? And the game before was like a double header, and I think we played Finland just before that. And he sets up Craig Bellamy, I think it is, brilliantly. There's a ball, quick give and go, I think it's with Ramsey maybe or Bale. Ball then, brilliant pass comes back into him, he's gone then. Much maligned Simon Church has run himself back onside, taking the defender away. Happier times for Simon Church. And he kind of puts it right across and sets up, Bellamy it was. And it's a really, really... nice swift attacking move, and there are a few. If you go back and have a look at them on YouTube, there are a few little highlights like that. He sets up Morrison against
Montenegro,
about 2011. It's a really good bit of play as well.
Yeah, I think he can hold his head up high. I think he's contributed a lot. He's been there in important games. He's been there in important times. And it's nice, I think, as well to have people retiring, because you know I joked about at the start about more. We've had more withdrawals on the John Toshak squad, but you know the reality was that you had people, you know, retiring in inverted commas in many cases, left, right, and centre for quite some time, and it's nice for somebody to sort of to bow out, and you kind of go, yeah, you know, I don't begrudge that. It's probably about the right time actually before a campaign starts at the start of a season. He started on the bench, I think, for Forest as well, so he's probably thinking, you know, if I'm going to squeeze a few more games, he'd have never earned the huge big bucks that most players do. And if you mentioned that Blackpool season, and I can remember at the time he was Blackpool Player of the Season, and
we had 30 league starts that season.
Well, who got a move to a big club on big money off the back of that season? And it was
Charlie Adam, yeah.
And you know, you didn't have to be a Blackpool fanatic or anything like that to recognise that actually there's a very sort of reliable sort of foil to Adam's game in midfield that season that has kind of allowed him to get that move.
Brilliant. I'm going to throw some trivia back at you.
Go on then.
That Blackpool season at Blackpool, in week 11 of that Premier League season, he was in the team of the week, as was one other Welsh international playing at Blackpool.
Was it Garth Crooks' team of the week though?
I think it was the official one. Garth Crooks has only had two defenders in it, and this guy is a defender, so it can't be
it. Is it going to be Neil Ardley?
Yeah. You're going to have to. You've forgotten he was a regular for Blackpool that season.
You're going to have to work harder than that to get one over me. And kept Chris Gunter out the side for a short while. at the start of Gunther's international career.
Yeah.
So best luck to David Vaughan. Thanks for the memories. Yeah, it probably isn't now the right time. He didn't play in France.
No.
So that's probably the right time.
Maybe next week would have been the right time because we could possibly do with him now.
Well, that's a good point, actually. And Coleman interestingly sort of said the door will always be open for him.
Yeah.
So I think you clearly, you know, when we get back to it, and you know, there was a lot of flat flying his way, Vaughan. Not his fault. He's not going to turn down the place in the Euro squad, is he? You know, because fans think Hugh should go or whatever. But you begin to think that, you know, they clearly rate him as a member of the squad, as reliable and what have you. But the chance is there now for Hugh finally to re-nail a berth down, maybe?
I hope so. It's what I would see as like a correct international retirement. You know, you get these people who retire 29, 30 years old and a lot of uproar then, isn't there? Or you've got more to offer, why are you letting your country down, blah, blah. 33, when you're not getting the team anymore, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah. Although I also agree with Pat Nevin that you know, your country should retire you, and I think even at 53 or whatever he is, he's still available for Scotland should they need him.
Yeah, well, I'm available for Wales.
Indeed, absolutely. Anything else? I mean, for me, it was kind of, I mean, it's that typical Wales, even though, hey, listen, as you say, the current era is great, we're still on a high, we're still on cloud nine after the Euros, but we have a get together and we've talked to the past that none of the goalkeepers were playing. Now they're all playing.
Mm.
None of our strikers are playing. And it is that analogy, albeit I'm applying it in a different way than Toshak used to. It's that you need to, you know, cover your head or you can cover your feet with a duvet, but you can't cover both.
No.
It's great that the keepers are playing, albeit there's a bit of a niggle, I think, that Hennessy's got,
yeah.
which is great. But if Hennessy isn't available, Ward steps in.
Yeah.
No worries there.
Yeah.
Surely. In defence, though, Chester's got a new club. Ashley Williams, I think, has only had a handful of minutes as a late substitute for Everton.
I think he played 90 in midweek.
Okay, I stand corrected.
He came on last 10 last weekend, and he's played 90 midweek. So was Neil Taylor. Apparently, Neil Taylor, I think, is asked to play for the under-23s. I don't think he's quite ready for the league game this weekend. But Guidlin was very positive about that. You know, praising his kind of his attitude and wanting to go and do that. So that's good. I think, you know, he'll be available. Ben Davis hasn't played at all. Of course, Spurs haven't had any UEFA Cup or Cup yet, so he's just been on the bench in a couple of league games.
Didn't play a huge amount last season for Spurs either.
No.
They had a lot of games, admittedly, and he was being sort of rotated a bit. But
interesting, now they're in a proper European tournament. Given that Rose is first choice, where will Davis fit into that? Assuming Rose stays first choice.
Does that mean Collins comes in, possibly?
I think so. James Collins.
Does that mean Collins comes in possibly?
I think so. I think he did. I think he did well in his role when he came in the tournament. I think he's fairly dependable. I think he seems even as an older player. He seems, when he gets in that West Ham team, because he's had problems with injury on and off in the last couple of years. But when he gets in the West Ham team, he stays there unless injury gets him out of it. Once he's got a couple of games and performances under his belt, it seems like he's a kind of leader in my defence, a good player, and that seems to be how he started the season. He's keeping Bonner out of the team. The only, you know, he hasn't featured so much in Europe, and it's all gone wrong for them there, so that's got to probably increase his stock as well, you thought.
Yeah, I think he was thrown on as an emergency centre forward, actually, in that European game. Of course, he started off at Cardiff as a striker. He's one cap away from 50 as well, so he will be busting a gut to want to play, I reckon.
I
wouldn't be too surprised if we see him. But I suppose the other point as well, in terms of defenders, is then the number that we employ and the formation, because Coleman has said that he needs to maybe think about something a little bit more attacking. We can't become too predictable. So he's looking at maybe different formations. To be fair, we did try a couple of things out in the friendlies running up to the Euros. So I don't think we're starting with a blank canvas immediately. I think they've got a few ideas in mind already, clearly. So if it's something like only a 4-4-2, then, you know, you can see maybe Collins coming in.
Possibly. I'd be very surprised if James Chester doesn't play. I mean, you might look at the move to Villa and think, well, this guy was incredible in the Euros. Go to a bigger club, but he's come into the Villa team. I think they're undefeated and two clean sheets in the three games he's played. He's a regular now again. He was kind of wasting his time out of position or on the bench at West Brom. And he's going to be, you know, match fit a few games under his belt. He's coming off the back of a brilliant tournament. And I thought he's got to play. if we go 4-4-2, then I'd imagine Ashley Williams will start as well. But if we stick with the three at the back, Collins could come in for Davis. Although again, I'd be surprised if he leaves Davis out as long as he's vaguely fit. But it's nice to have options, I suppose, for all the lack of game time for one or two of those players. We still feel like we've got defensive options.
So tell me about Moldova then.
Possibly, I'd be very surprised if James Chester doesn't play. I mean, you might look at the move to Villa and think, well, this guy was incredible in the Euros. Go to a bigger club, but he's come into the Villa team. I think they're undefeated and two clean sheets in the three games he's played. He's a regular now again. He was kind of wasting his time out of position or on the bench at West Brom. And he's going to be match fit a few games under his belt. He's coming off the back of a brilliant, brilliant tournament. And I thought he's got to play. If we go 4-4-2, then I'd imagine Ashley Williams will start as well. But if we stick with the three at the back, Collins could come in for Davis. Although again, I'd be surprised if he leaves Davis out as long as he's vaguely fit. But it's nice to have options, I suppose, for all the lack of game time for one or two of those players. We still feel like we've got defensive options.
So tell me about Moldova then. You've done the research.
I've done a bit of research.
Because we owe them something, don't we? They were part of that horrible sort of mid-90s, post-World Cup 94, post-Romania, post-Terry Orath sort of decline and demise.
Miserable times.
By the Wales team. And we went out there. We didn't know where it was. We didn't know who they were. And we lost 3-2.
Found out, didn't we?
Albeit, they scored a couple of... I mean, absolute worldies.
The first goal is incredible. It catches it beautifully way outside the area and it flies in. We had we were missing Giggs and Hughes, I think, Rush, Saunders were all out that day. Yeah. But we had a functional but decent team there, and we got caught out big time. In fact, I think in that game, the 3-2 out in Moldova, Gary Speed and Nathan Blake both scored their first goals for Wales. What a thing that must have been for the rest of it. Because, do you remember the first time you scored for your country? That must have been an amazing day. Not really, no.
But they've not really amounted to much, have they? I mean, Georgia, no. Some of the other former Soviet states have, they've done
still,
okay. They've picked up a couple of results.
I still think they kind of look at that win against us as one of their two or three best wins ever.
Yeah.
And they won another kind of game early on, and they got a 5-2 win over, I think that's over Montenegro, about 3 or 4 years ago. They're not a great team, but in the last qualifying campaign, although they really struggled, they drew two and lost all the rest, they didn't concede more than two goals in any game. They're not going to be a team that we can expect to turn up and win 4-0, 5-0, I don't think. They got a draw with Russia in the last campaign. They lost by the odd goal to Austria twice. They lost by the odd goal to Russia in their other fixture with them. And they've carried that on into their friendlies in 2016. They played Andorra, 1-0 in Andorra. We know that's always a bit of a challenge to go and get a win out there, as we found. They lost narrowly to Croatia, narrowly to Switzerland. I think they'll be difficult. I saw kind of stuff on social media about... If you can't experiment, if you can't blood new players against Moldova, well, can you? I really don't think it's the time. I think if we start playing a couple more friendlies, fair enough. But I think this has the potential to trip us up, just like Andorra did 2 years ago, and we want to just comfortable 2-0 now.
You touch on friendlies, I was going to come back to that in a moment. You're right, nobody gave them a whooping, but I mean, at the same time, you don't lose 1-0 at home to Liechtenstein, and they only scored 4 goals in that campaign in 10 games, so I don't think they're going to offer much of a threat, but you would probably still take 1-0, of course.
They're going to organise and set up and get behind the ball and make it really, really difficult for us. And there have been times in the last 2 years when teams do that, we find it difficult to break them down.
And I think because of that, I think it's going to be a useful test to then be able to say, okay, are we any better at breaking down those teams that are sitting deep and parking the bus? Yeah, because Israel, we chipped away and we sort of lost our way a little bit in the sort of second half. Then we kind of another throw of the dice at the end. Church has that chance and it's ruled offside. But I think you kind of sense that if that game on maybe went on another 10, 15 minutes, we might have scored eventually. Yeah. Andorra wasn't kind of great, but then it was kind of party atmosphere and carnival mood, and we did what we had to do. Northern Ireland didn't really come at us in that friendly as well. So those teams, we have struggled. If we can now show that actually we can break these down, if we score early, that's always key. It's the old cliche. Try to bring them out a little bit, then potentially if Bale's fit, we haven't mentioned Bale yet. You know, he's only got one game under his belt, but a couple of goals, so he's looks to be in shape. Then you think, well, if we can get one early, then maybe another couple come.
I think it'd be a good measure of if are we making a transition from a team that goes into one tournament as a great sign there, but we want to become regular qualifiers and we want to have that savviness about international football, that more consistent competence about international football, where if you're playing Moldova at home, you win 2-0, you win 3-0, and you do it because you score your first goal in the first 20 minutes, and you don't need to worry. I want to see us not having those games like you were describing, and that'll be a real sign that we're taking the next step as an international team. I mean, they will just get behind the ball. Most of their players play in the Moldovan League. They got a couple of strikers, 6 or 7 goals in their careers. Very little outside of the Moldovan League. The one guy they have got is, I was reading up about him today, Arta Ionita. He's played Serie A in Italy a couple of seasons. He's just signed for Cagliari, who are just going up to Serie A now, but apparently Swansea were looking at him, apparently Juventus and Napoli and a couple of other big teams. So they might be one of those sides that's got this one, you know, more talented player. So, you know, we need to keep an eye on things like that. You know, there have been teams who've built, you know, a successful campaign here and there on the back of one really good player and then getting organised, and we don't want to get caught out by a team like that. Again,
they've got a bit of experience there, isn't it? So they're going to be streetwise. They're going to know what they need to do to get through an international game. We've got a couple of defenders with 70 odd caps, yeah. Goalkeepers with 40 odd caps.
Neither of whom are particularly old, 29, yeah. Those two defenders. Yeah. The only Moldovan player with more caps than either of those two is Rudi Rabea, who played, in fact, possibly even captained Moldova in the 3-2 win.
Oh dear.
Back then.
It was good just to exercise that a little bit. I know we beat them at home, only 1-0.
Colin
played
in that game,
yeah,
I think. So,
yeah,
he'll remember it.
Yeah. And it's going to be great to kind of, I know we had the bus tour and everything else as well, but to sort of welcome home in a footballing context. Yeah. So I think it's going to be a great night. Hopefully the weather is okay. It's not, you know, complete downpour like the Netherlands friendly and the Northern Ireland friendly were, and that we can maybe go at them. But because we are there to be shot at, aren't we now? There is no Germany or France or Spain, no traditional big gun. Austria, we were expecting more from them in the Euros. But it's you know, Ireland will be tough, and Serbia, you know, not a bad side. But that's our group because we got to the semi-finals of the Euros because we're the top seeded team in it.
Maybe it suits us as well to be playing at home the weakest team in this. It's not a doubleheader, it's just the one game. If we win it and win it comfortably, then depending on what goes on in the other games, the pressure could be slightly lifted off us and put on other teams. If Austria don't win in Georgia, pressure's on them really quickly and really early. Ireland and Serbia, if either of those teams lose, pressure's on them straight away. So it could be, you know, an interesting first week of fixtures, and then we go into not a bad doubleheader then against is Georgia at home and Austria away, hopefully thinking 4 points out of that. And
fixtures the other way around, but yeah. I think as well it's probably useful to kind of recall, let's be honest, you know, there was calls for Coleman's head and everybody was a bit down about how the Andorra game had gone. But we were perked up a little bit by the fact that Cyprus had won in Bosnia,
yeah.
Which immediately blew that group wide open. Bosnia off the back of a World Cup. Mm. So, now, and I'm not citing that because I think that we're going to have any post-tournament hangover. But we have talked about sides having post-tournament hangovers, and you hope we're not going to be one of them. But if Serbia and Ireland, Georgia and Austria are sharing points, and we can get a win, go to the top of the group, and there's something in that. You know, you start, you know, on the front foot. You're not chasing the group. That said, that's what Israel did last time, and they ran out of gas. So, it's just fascinating to be at the start of another campaign with this sense of expectation rather than hope.
Yeah.
Really. Exactly. It's, you know, again, this, you know, the whole Euros thing was a new thing. Qualifying was a new thing. Going out and winning 3-0 in Israel was a new thing. Beating Belgium was a new thing in so many respects. This is still a new thing.
I feel a bit like, semi-final's great, but it was only a Euros. I want to play in the World Cup now. That's
That's the next step. Do we have to win the group? Playoff second
place. Playoff second, yeah. There's nothing, for third place.
Hopefully not us, but out of those teams who presumably going into this thinking we've got a realistic chance of qualifying, Austria, Serbia, Ireland, by the time three games are up, like kind of Bosnia found the last time, interestingly you sort of cited that, someone could be virtually out of it. You know, if one of those teams really struggles, you know, loses against two of their rivals and maybe chucks a point away against one of the weaker teams, someone could be out of it by October, you know, like we always used to be.
It's going to be one of those groups where I think where teams are taking points off each other.
Yeah, home wins and away draws are going to be important, aren't they?
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. You mentioned friendlies earlier, and it sort of, you know, this game isn't the time to be experimenting. Well, of course, you know, it begs the question, well, when is? Because traditionally we don't play friendlies very often. And we went through, not last season, but the last season before, without playing any. We only played competitive fixtures. So, you know, hopefully we're going to see a couple of other games because in the calendar, so we can start beginning to see the likes of, you know, Lawrence and Burns and Adam Henley, Declan John, maybe it was another one I was expecting maybe to get into the squad.
Yeah, nice to see him.
Back, yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. And you wonder whether there's something going on there with Trollope immediately back in the side.
Yeah.
Hughes gets signed. Is there some other greater
formation sort of?
That's an interesting one.
Familiarity with one centre.
Although I think to be fair, the jury probably still out on Trollope and how the season started for Cardiff. Yeah. But yeah, we're going to need some friendlies, aren't we? Because okay, we're not going to experiment in the first game of a new campaign, even though it's against arguably the weakest team in the group. Well, we're not going to be experimenting in Austria. Do we experiment then against what is probably the next weakest? Georgia, you begin to think,
I don't think any experimentation as such, certainly not in terms of brand new personnel or anything kind of radically different in terms of tactics, goes on in competitive games. I mean, if when we made changes tactically in the last qualifying campaign, because they had a clear idea, they drilled the team well on it, similar or the same sort of players carry it out. If we're talking about trying to blood some of these new youngsters, okay, if we get injuries, they might get their chance. But I'd be interested to know, to be honest, and I don't know where the international windows are for a friendly game, because we've got mostly double headers after this first one, I think. I don't know when else we're supposed to be lining them up. But it'd be nice to have one during the season in between some of our competitive games, and especially if your Bradshaws, your Henleys, some of these players look like they're there.
Well, and that's the thing, isn't it? Because otherwise, we're not really going to know, are we?
No.
And I think there becomes a point in time where, yes, loyalty is good to a certain extent and having that consistency and that routine. But if it gets harder to get out of the squad than to get in, and even more so the team, well, I think in the long term that becomes counterproductive. So I think it would be great. I think we could have one or two fixtures. And to be fair, in the run-up to the Euros, Ward played, Vaughan Williams played, Henley got a game, Igrove got a game. You know, Lawrence got starts and George Williams played and so on. So some of those more fringe players did get game time. But you don't really see many of those sort of players getting a chance in these next sort of fixtures coming up.
Yeah. True, but the best thing those players can do is have good club seasons. They, you know, they need to be demanding a chance. If someone like Lawrence or Bradshaw or whoever is scoring 15, 20 goals in the Championship, then even in a competitive game, you know, you're thinking, oh yeah, we'll maybe give him a goal, we'll chuck him on off the bench or whatever else. You know, if it's friendlies, so we can experiment with players who, you know, we've got no good reason from their club game to think are really going to set the team alight. I don't go along with this idea that international football is completely different. You know, you don't know to do chuck him in. Well, you do know, because you watch their club games, you maybe bring them in and see how they go in training. You know, I think the first onus is on the players to earn the right to have a go. To be honest, I'd like us to have a few more players getting to that point. You know, I think if anyone does worry about maybe the lack of transition or evolution of the squad, I don't put particularly myself, but if they do, it might come from the fact that actually the next crop of players looking to burst in, we've got lots of good young players we could point out, he might be good, you know, he might come well, but we want to see that starting to happen. And a lot of stories in the past where highly promising players, it hasn't worked out, and you could start to look at Johnny Williams and George Williams and one or two of these players and think, oh, do you know what, is it ever going to really work, their club career ever really going to work out long term if they can't stay fit, if they can't really have a consistent run of form at club level? And I'd like to see a few players from our set up doing that.
But I think the interesting thing with Wales is that they have this acknowledged Welsh way in this, in terms of approach and formation on the pitch, but then also off the pitch, in terms of there is that clear pathway. So you can lift a player out of the 17s and drop them in the 21s. You can lift them out like they did with Ben Davis, out of the 19s, straight into the seniors. Declan John, out of the 17s, into the seniors. And the environment is the same for them. Yeah. Okay, the personnel around them is different. So there's clearly a, for want of a better word, a project happening there with Wales. And I think they will fast track players if they feel that they deserve that. I think, to be fair, as I said, it comes back to it, two really important games coming up. Home games, I think it's one's in, I forget which fixtures are where, one's in Bangor, one's in Wrexham against Denmark and Luxembourg. And Denmark, we've got a 0-0 out there in the 21s. They're clearly the favourites in that group. Very, very capable team. And we're in the running there. So maybe after this round of fixtures, it becomes clear whether Wales are going to proceed or not. If they're not, then maybe a couple of those get elevated, irrespective of where they're getting games, because they've come through that system. So, I mean, how do you think it's going to go? Prediction?
I think we'll win. I think confidence will be high, and I think 2-0, 3-0 on a good day.
Yeah, I was thinking sort of 2-0.
I can't, 3-0 if we score early.
I can't see him scoring. Yeah, no, that I'm the same. Like, I can't see us conceding. I don't think they'll offer much of a threat. And I think it'll be a boisterous crowd. But I think it's important. I think the right messages have come out in the press conferences as well about, you know, that's been, it's gone, let's carry on.
Yeah.
Coleman almost didn't want to talk about the Euros in the press conference, I sensed. And it was a really, I mean, genuinely impressive performance by him. I just thought he was, I thought he was brilliant in it. And we now know, of course, because it's been in the books, it's in Chris Watson's book, it's in Jamie Thomas's book, about how much preparation goes into those press conferences, about reinforcing internal messages in the camp.
Yeah.
It's not just about how do you, you know, with a flat bat deal with questions from the media, and it's not just about, you know, what sort of banal platitudes are we going to throw up this time. It's about reinforcing those messages. And so clearly to go into that press conference in the way that he did, there was intent on his part to say what he did and to say it in the manner. And I remember when we did the podcast with Chris Wathen about his book, one of the things he sort of said was that Chris actually was a bit, I think, I mean, this wasn't Chris's words, but it was kind of my interpretation of it, was almost a little bit, maybe not embarrassed, but didn't want to kind of come across as that kind of council house, town hill, estate lad. And he wanted to be a bit more articulate. And I think, to be fair, he has come a long way. His early press conferences, performances weren't great. Actually, it was a bit more actually a throwback to that, right, sleeves rolling up, and I'm going to say it how it is, sort of approach. And I thought that was very, very telling. And it wasn't just about Ramsey and Wenger. It was about Team GB. It was about what Sam Allardyce was saying. And things like that.
I know I was kind of a little bit not so sure about the way you might want to deal with Wenger and Arsenal, but shutting down the Team GB thing, shutting down any more talk of Hull or leaving the job. Really,
yes, that was the other one.
Great what he had to say about David Vaughan as well. It was, you know, lots of talking points in a press conference, and you know, lots of opportunities to be tripped up or get something wrong or mess up, and you didn't say and said it. So,
yes, no, all credit to him. Well done, Chris. Keep up the good work. So, comfortable win, we think. Let's hope there's no more injuries.
I hope not, yeah. I think we're going to see Ledley and Hennessy now, but we don't want any more than that.
Serbia and Ireland sharing the points would be great, I think.
Where is that?
In Serbia. I mean, Ireland would be pleased with an away draw, I would admit.
I think not a Serbia win. I think I fancy us against Ireland and picking points up from them. I'm not confident about games against Serbia. Why is just that? It's just that lingering doubt about Balkan teams, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, we still have a kind of old sort of Iron Curtain Eastern Europe thing to get off our back as well, and we've got ample opportunity in this group.
We won the last time we played Moldova as well. That's not, you know, we talked about the 3-2.
Well, okay.
We won the second game.
Yeah, fair enough. The Georgia-Austria game, we probably expect Austria to win, but they had a dreadful Euros. You know, massive things were expected off them.
You know, everyone's dark horse. It's the danger of the dark horse, isn't it?
It's the label you don't want going into a tournament. But they'll look to want to improve on that.
Yeah.
It's probably good for them that maybe they've got an away game first, actually, rather than have to sort of face the fans and the ire of them. But I think they're going to be the competition for us in this group now. And you know, if Georgia could do something similar to what Cyprus did to Bosnia, I think that would be fantastic. Particularly then, because then we've got to go out to them next game.
Yeah.
And so if they need points, even if they only draw on Georgia, that puts a lot of pressure onto them. That is just perfect for us.
Yeah,
assuming we've won, of course, against Moldova.
I think Georgia would be very, very dangerous. It's not a stretch at all to imagine that Georgia are going to take points off
of several teams. You know, they're not a bad side.
You can't see any teams going through that campaign and getting no points.
No.
So you just don't want to be the team that they take points off.
You've got 6 points off Moldova and 6 points off Georgia. It's a big, big step.
It is, because they're going to be taking points off the other teams.
Yeah.
Excellent. Perfect. Thank you, Gareth. Hopefully we haven't bored people too much with just our voices. When we get back together, I'm sure we'll have some of the others on board. Best luck to Rich, whose wife is expecting anytime soon, which is why he's not around. A couple of plugs to a couple of things. We need down tools completely over the summer, though we didn't do any podcasts. There's a couple of blogs, there's a book review there, and it's something about the curious geography of goalkeepers and kind of tries to work out why North Walians and sort of what I've tenuously called and haven't actually been criticised for, which I was genuinely surprised by, the sort of the greater Swansea area account for so many of the goalkeeping caps in Wales's entire history. So yeah, if that pushes your buttons, there's those there. And until next time, thank you for listening.